This weekend is a special time to focus on God's forgiveness and reconciliation. C.S. Lewis wrote, "To be a Christian means to forgive the inexcusable because God has forgiven the inexcusable in you." So today's show is about how to forgive the inexcusable in others as well as in ourselves. We're here to tell you why and show you how. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. Forgiveness is often considered a gift we give another. It's true, but in giving it away, we receive much more. The relief of negative emotions that would otherwise destroy our physical, mental, and spiritual health. To forgive and forget is a myth. Forgiveness is about remembering without the bitterness. That sounds impossible, right? Humanly speaking, it often is. But there's hope, because spiritually speaking, it is possible. Daryl and Barbara Bigger can testify to that. Here they reminisce at Washington Adventist Hospital, where Shannon, their daughter, worked before she was murdered.
Being back here in front of the hospital reminds me of her.
Lots of memories.
She was in most ways a delightful child, cooperative, yeah. Cheerful. Remember the little award she got as a Pathfinder?
She was so thrilled to get a can top, can lid that said she was a good camper.
Yeah.
Then she was just a good kid overall.
Yeah.
Knew where she wanted to go in life. And then she got to move to Washington, D.C., the other Washington. She was so happy to get a paid internship in their philanthropy department, and she and I loaded up her little Oldsmobile and U-Haul trailer and came back here and found the apartment that seemed to be just the exact place that she needed to live. And I got to come with her and meet her new boss and see her office, and it was a fun trip.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do a lot of sightseeing on the way, went to Mount Rushmore, had Disney DVDs or CDs playing in her car radio all the way across the United States. We sang Little Mermaid songs and Beauty and the Beast and all the rest. She was such a Disney, love of Disney.
She made good friends here.
She did.
Got actively connected to a
congregation.
Church community.
It was good for her. Yeah, worked with Pathfinders.
I think some of her year of volunteer teaching in Yap in Micronesia molded her interest in kids as well.
Yes, I think so. She didn't really want to be a teacher, but she enjoyed being around them and interacting and helping them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was a good year of her life also.
I'm not sure I ever got used to her being a professional person.
No, she was always our little girl. When she'd come home, it was still being our kid. And it wasn't until we came back for her memorial service, actually, that I began to understand that she was a professional, hearing stories.
Mm-hmm.
Her first real job, and then her life ended. We invited Dr. Bigger to discuss forgiveness here in the studio on today's show. But first, the news. In the headlines today, health declines with unforgiveness, hostility a quick trigger for heart attacks, and self-forgiveness, shame and guilt. Unforgiveness is associated with a self-reported decline in physical health. The Indiana-based Religion, Aging and Health Survey involved over 1,000 American seniors, following them for 3 years. Unforgiveness trait, self-rated physical health. Sociodemographics, health behaviours, and positive psychological traits were all assessed over time. Unforgiveness was associated with declines in physical health during the study, due in part to its interruption of positive psychological traits like life satisfaction and self-esteem, which typically confer health benefits. So don't let unforgiveness stand in the way of your health and happiness. A new review has concluded that an outburst of anger can cause changes that result in a heart attack or stroke. Researchers at the Harvard School of Public Health have reviewed studies linking short bouts of anger to cardiovascular events in the next few hours and found a direct relationship. For example, the risk of a heart attack was increased fourfold, cardiac arrhythmias doubled, and the risk of an intracranial hemorrhage rose sixfold. Published in the European Heart Journal, the editorial suggests that anger triggers stress hormones. They create a higher cardiac oxygen demand, spasm of the coronary arteries, and increased platelet stickiness, with transient oxygen debt, disruption of atherosclerotic plaques, and an increased chance of clot formation within blood vessels. This results in heart attacks, strokes, and arrhythmias. So deal with your stresses, learn new ways of coping, and heal your hostile heart. Extending forgiveness to self and others is related to health, but self-forgiveness is relatively more important when it comes to health-related outcomes. In a study of 360 undergraduates in Tennessee, forgiveness of self and of others was reflected in physical health status, physical symptoms, mental health status, and psychological distress. The connection between them seemed to link via health behaviors and social supports, but unforgiveness of self also caused interpersonal problems and had more of an impact on health. And in a recent Australian study, guilt and shame were barriers to both addiction recovery and to forgiveness of self. The answer they found was acceptance. And if you're struggling with guilt and shame, we want you to know that you're accepted by God, just as you are, and forgiven. If you can experience that, then you're more likely to accept and forgive yourself. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's Health News. Dr. Daryl Bigger is a pastor and professor at Walla Walla University in Washington State. He's a certified clinical social worker, a licensed marriage and family therapist. He joined us in the studio to discuss forgiveness, not just as a professor, but as a participant in the process also. I asked him how he dealt with the news of Shannon's death. No parent should ever have to experience what you experienced. You must have had profound grief and loss when you first found out.
It was a stunning shock, of course, when that announcement came to us. And initially, you wish not to believe that it's really true. In the room, I burst into tears immediately because it just racked me with the impact of what happened.
Mm. Now, did it take long before your thoughts turned to the young man who had murdered Shannon? And what emotions did you initially have? Intense anger, hostility? What was that like?
God preserved me from those feelings for a period of time, for which I was very grateful. I was so overwhelmed with the loss and sadness that I grieved for several months. And it wasn't until Anthony appealed the following spring that the rage and anger hit me.
So it was quite a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's important to do the grieving first rather than trying to deal with the grief and the forgiveness or the unforgiveness part at the same time?
See, absolutely true. If a person tries to escape the grief by being angry, dealing with the intensity of their rage or frustration at that, they bypass the whole stage of grieving. And theoretically, it makes sense to grieve intensely first, to face the sadness. That happened to me, and as I look back at it, I'm very grateful that that took place. I'm an Irishman by heritage, so I have adequate amount of intense frustration to deal with in my life. And for God to have preserved me from having to face that initially allowed me to deal with the loss and the sadness. And it was very helpful for me.
Now then we move on to when the rage came. Mm. As a Christian, did you struggle to hold your faith and yet feel those negative emotions overwhelming you?
It was an intense conflict, and it hit me hard in a Sabbath morning sermon where John Kress, the chaplain who had initially told us that Shannon had been killed, was preaching one Sabbath morning, not knowing about all this struggle I had been going through. And the struggle had become debilitating for me.
Now, as a counselor and a pastor and a social worker, you must have had some skills there that would help you through this. No?
It was humbling, narrative, because I should have known how to deal with all of that. I was at the time teaching a stress management class. So I knew how to deal with pressures and stresses in life and would teach students and practice with them how to relax themselves, how to let oppressive thoughts escape from them instead of being obsessed by them, etc. None of that would work for me.
Stay with us to find out what worked. You'll be amazed. After the break, we have a healthy hot soup to show you, but first, this. Things don't seem to be improving. Are you eating the way I recommended?
Yes.
And drinking plenty of water?
Yes.
And exercising?
Yes, I'm doing everything you told me to do faithfully every day. I'm not drinking alcohol. I'm not doing all that other bad stuff you told me not to do.
Well, then maybe this is spiritual.
Come on, Doc. Spirituality, faith have nothing to do with health.
Oh, yes, they do.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, there was this study of 22 kibbutzim, 11 secular, 11 religious, and they followed them for 16 years. They were matched demographically for age and gender and all those things. The death rate on the secular kibbutzim, 3 times higher than that on the religious kibbutzim.
Oh, but that's got nothing to do with faith. That was probably just a fluke, Doc.
Well, consider this. Dr. Krukoff took cardiac patients. I mean, these were critical patients. And one group received music, touch, and prayer.
You've got to be kidding me, Doc. That's a bit touchy-feely, isn't it?
Well, the group that got the prayer and the therapy, they had fewer complications, did better overall.
Oh, well, maybe there is something to this faith thing. You know, matter of fact, I heard last week that those who learn to forgive, they have lower blood pressure, lower anxiety, and lower depression.
And God is the perfect role model of forgiveness.
So I guess you're right. A doctor should treat body, mind, and spirit. Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome. Don't leave God off your prescription.
I know I'm looking for something. But what? Peace? Purpose? Meaning? I'm still not sure. But I know it's going to take faith.
Kitchen today, and I want to make some garbanzo and spinach soup. And this is a wonderful soup that's got legumes and grains, so it's a complete protein. It's like a meal in one pot, which I always love because it saves the dishes. So what we want to put into our soup is 1 tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, 3 cloves of garlic thinly sliced, 2 thinly sliced green onions, 4 cups of vegetable broth, 2 cups of water, 3/4 cup of uncooked orzo, 1 tablespoon of grated lemon rind, 1 can of no salt added chickpeas, drained, 1 tablespoon of chopped fresh oregano, 1 tablespoon of lemon juice, 1 pinch of salt, and 6 ounces of fresh baby spinach. Now, those ingredients don't sound very much like soup, but this makes a wonderful thick soup. So what we've done is we have fried the onions and the garlic in the oil. Now we need to add the water and the veggie broth. Now you can save the water that you've steamed your vegetables in, or you can buy a veggie broth. And if you don't use very much water, you won't find that you create much broth at home, but you can pour that into a jar and keep it in the fridge. And then you've always got some veggie stock on hand. You can even freeze it. So in goes our veggie broth, and you want to watch what is in the bought veggie broths, because they sometimes can add hydrogenated or partially hydrogenated fats to those little cubes, the little stock cubes. So be very careful with which ones you buy, and try to avoid the ones that have the monosodium glutamate or the flavorings, artificial flavorings. So we're going to want to get this to the boil. Once it's to the boil, and we're going to pretend it's there already, we're going to add our chickpeas and lemon rind. And this seems something very strange to add to soup, but it really makes this soup so different. So we'll add our grated lemon rind and then our pasta, our orzo. And orzo is used because it cooks very quickly. So you can find any pasta actually that will cook within 9 to 10 minutes. And you can use that instead if you can't get hold of orzo. Once that has boiled for 10 minutes, you're going to want to add in some lemon juice, some fresh oregano, and a pinch of salt. Because your veggie broth will have had salt, you actually don't want to add very much extra salt. And finally, those baby spinach. I love spinach. So full of good nutrition. Nice, if you cook it well, it's got good bioavailable iron, but it also has omega-3 fats. So lots of goodness, lots of antioxidants, vitamin K, and all sorts of wonderful things. So once that's all cooked together, head over here. Let's have a look at what it's going to look like at the very end. Here we have it. Orzo, chickpeas, spinach, all floating on the top here. And you might want to serve that with bagels and hummus or croutons or something yummy. But I tell you, this has this lovely lemony flavor. There's nothing quite like this soup. I can't compare it to anything. You're going to have to try it. Now back to Barbara and Darrell talking about Shannon.
Well, this is where Shannon and I pulled in with her little U-Haul. It contained her earthly possessions. And in a very hot, hot July day, we started unpacking here. We felt kind of led to this. My cousin had told us good places to live in this area, and this was one of them.
Good places that would be safe places.
Safe places. And we found this place, and the telling tale was that it had a black and white check kitchen floor, and Shannon had dreamed about a black and white check kitchen floor. So this was the place, and she lived right here in this apartment, number 101. So it was meant to be.
And then months later, 2 weeks before she was due to leave here and move back west, came that horrible announcement.
Police have a mystery on their hands this evening with the murder of a young woman in Silver Spring. 25-year-old Shannon Marie Bigger was originally from Washington State. She was found by the manager of Montgomery.
We never thought we would hear such a thing. We never knew anybody that had been murdered before. And, you know, that only happens to other people.
She had been out the day before with relatives in the area. And had been downtown to a musical concert. When she came back, they dropped her off and went back to their house. Then the next morning, did they try to call her?
They tried to call her actually Sunday evening, and no answer.
Didn't get an answer.
No answering machine, which was strange. But then Monday morning, they tried again and still no answer. Then they called her at work, mm-hmm. and no, she hadn't come in. And my cousin sent her husband over here to find what was wrong. Her car was still parked here, and he knew something was awry and amiss, so he went in to check on her. And the door was slightly ajar. He said, I didn't want to go in, but I felt compelled. So it was kind of a mess because she was packing to move, and neighbors thought that she was actually selling some of her things because they had seen a man go in and out of her apartment with some of her stuff.
When Barbara's cousin's yeah. husband found her, he rushed down to the manager's office. They called 911, and very quickly the police and rescue people came and found her and confirmed the horrible deed.
Yeah.
She was killed on Father's Day. And that year, Father's Day happened to be her grandfather, Barbara's father's birthday. So for many years after that, those two events brought back some pretty painful memories for us.
It's hard to celebrate Father's Day for a long time for you.
I ignored it for a long time. It's getting better now. I think there's some healing for me.
And you've got another daughter that needs to have a dad.
Yeah.
Time and the solace of others does bring healing. Dr. Darrell Bigger was a Rear Admiral in the U.S. Navy and was in the Pentagon on 9/11, so he's much experience to share on the topic of forgiveness. In the last segment, he told us that several months after Shannon's murder, he was in church listening to a sermon. Internally, he was struggling with the need to forgive Anthony, the man who pled guilty of murdering Shannon.
Well, in the weeks leading up to that, I had been struggling with my own internal frustration and anger toward Anthony for wanting to plead not guilty to what he had admitted he had done and wishing to have his sentences reduced to which he had agreed. And it was just infuriating to me that he was trying to escape the consequences for what he had admitted had happened.
Right.
And I came to church that morning still tied up in knots, clenched fists, tight jaw. It was a miserable time. And John's sermon that morning was about how other people would know we're Christians by the way we love one another. And my mind immediately jumped to other texts, records of other things Jesus had said about loving one another, and specifically his injunction to love your enemies and do good to those who abuse you
and despitefully use you.
And I had been unable for weeks to do that. Mm. I had tried all the natural techniques I knew. I'd been teaching a spirituality class for a few years, so should have known how prayer and meditation allow us to release our burdens to God and not carry the ours ourselves. None of that was working for me.
But that's a very tall order to go from this anger, this hostility, this need almost, or a desire for justice to be served. Because in our previous show, we talked about this injustice gap, that when you need to forgive, at least some justice will help you to move towards the forgiveness. But here, the injustice gap was widening for you, wasn't it?
And I have adjusted my view of what justice is and what it does.
Since this experience?
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think a challenge for us as human beings in order to repair ourselves from intense losses and experiences similar to these is to let God be the one who carries justice, and for us to be willing to let God do that for us. A significant challenge in human life is to trust God's promises to do what He tells us He will do. We try to fix things ourselves. And the more we try to do that, the more it frustrates, I think, a longer-term solution.
And I'm thinking of the scripture in the Bible that we all use, and we shorten it and we say that God says, I will repay.
Mm-hmm.
he doesn't focus a lot on that, but that is a promise, isn't it?
It is a promise.
So you, here you are, you're sitting in church, and you're suddenly challenged by this thought that you need to love Anthony.
And I had tried and tried for weeks to do that and could not make it happen. So I ended up that Sabbath morning facing myself as an angry, resentful, cynical human being, one who could not be what I wanted to be. And I realized in a humiliating way that I was in as much need of God's grace as was Anthony in his prison cell in Jessup.
Now, hang on. You have served your country in the Navy. You hold a Distinguished Service Award. You've been a pastor. You've been a counselor. You've healed many broken homes and families. But you're seeing yourself in the same light as Anthony.
Incapable of doing what I wish to do. A failure. Spiritually bankrupt. And it was humiliating.
And now we're going to come back to this this point of, you know, because many people would say, I'm good. I don't need God. I'm good enough. And they'll judge their lives by that. And yet here you are saying there's nothing good in you. You're bankrupt. You're spiritually bankrupt. How did that help you to come to a point of forgiveness?
In my view of forgiveness, the first step is to admit the truth. And for those who have been abused or hurt, mistreated, betrayed, that is to admit the truth about what happened to them. We have a tendency to want to run away from those painful experiences and not face them concretely.
Right.
So for survivors, an essential step is to admit what happened to them. The second thing that was a major transition for me is to recognize myself not only as a survivor, or what some people call a victim. I resist that kind of negative, depressing label, but to admit to myself that I'm not only one who experienced mistreatment, but I am one who perpetuates that myself, to see myself as a perpetrator and not only as a victim. So it's not just facing the truth about what happened to me, but to face the truth about myself. That becomes an essential part of forgiveness in a whole expanded way.
After the break, Dr. Bigger will give us a practical demonstration to help us come to forgiveness. But first, this. It has been said that resentment is like drinking poison and then waiting for someone else to die. Unforgiveness is the same. In the Bible story, Joseph chose to forgive those who mistreated him, and there were many. First, there were 11 brothers who bullied and abused him until they finally threw him into a pit. When slave traders happened by, it was more profitable for them to sell him than to leave him to die. In slavery, his excellence drew the attention of his master's wife, who, frustrated by failing to seduce him, accused him of rape. So from slavery, he was then sent to prison. In prison, God gave him an accurate interpretation of the dreams of Pharaoh's butler and baker, who had been indicted for high treason. Yet despite their promise to secure his release, they forgot him and he remained in prison for years. Suddenly, in one day, he found himself the second most powerful man in the world. Instead of bitterness and hatred, Joseph had learned to forgive, which actually made him the most powerful of men, especially in God's eyes. Have you been victimized? Then become the victor through forgiveness.
Thank you. Lord is my rock, my fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
And we're back. In association with Barbara Hernandez, Dr. Bigger has developed a program called Forgive Now, and it's a workshop. So we're going to get practical now and talk about how, what things you can do, and feel free to join us, working towards forgiveness. So Dr. Bigger, let's pretend on my way to work today, someone cut me off at the traffic lights and I got pretty mad at them. What am I going to do now to try and, I need to work towards forgiving them?
Research points toward a couple of exercises that can be immediately helpful to us. One of those is deep breathing, and another is body awareness, physical awareness. So let's practice. Okay. Imagine that you are back there again at that spot in traffic, and this person has just cut you off. So in order to block what's happening right now, I'm going to close my eyes and imagine having somebody pull out in front of me. And I'm aware that my jaw is getting tight, that my stomach is tensing up, that my legs are, the muscles in my legs are tightening, and I'm holding my breath. First thing I want to do is take 5 deep breaths, slowly, not in a hurry. These are not huffing and puffing breaths like the dragon. These are deep inhalations. And then a relaxing and letting the air go out.
And what you were doing, you were describing what was happening to your body. So you were becoming aware of the body's response to the stress. And now you're letting go of those bodily responses. Is that right?
The deep breathing does 2 things. It begins to concentrate our physiological response on those airways, and those deep breaths both provide some oxygen to our brain and relax the brain, and that has an impact on our muscular body. Mm-hmm. And at the end of those 5 breaths, one begins to feel a bit more physically relaxed. At the end of those breaths, then pay attention to your body. Mm-hmm. See where you feel stress or tension. So right now I feel a little tingling in my feet. The muscles in my legs that were tense earlier are a bit more loose. I still feel some tightness in my jaw. So when I focus my attention then on where the tension is at this moment in my jaw, as I remember that person pulling out in front of me, I choose to move my jaw so that it can relax. I let it relax. Let the tension leave. And just let some time go by. Don't need to talk to myself. Several seconds of letting that stress ebb away. So that's just a little example of letting the pressure go. After that is gone, then you can deal with the issue itself.
And how might we do that?
Then you can rationally process, what is it I can do about this person? The truth is, you can do nothing. Mm-hmm. If there's room, you could move into another lane. But you can't make good decisions when the stress is physiologically and mentally present. So you must go through that relaxation exercise first before you can make wise choices.
Are you looking for more peace in your life and a better night's sleep? Making changes in your diet and exercise patterns could be the answer. Recently, researchers questioned 2,600 people who had participated in a lifestyle program that focused on healthy food choices and increasing physical exercise. Just 4 weeks later, more than half of these individuals reported sleeping more deeply, feeling less stressed, enjoying emotional stability, and having less fear and depression. A change in lifestyle will improve your well-being, and that's another ageless advantage.
And now for your questions. Ivy asks, I'm thinking about exercising with yoga, but meditation is encouraged. What's the difference between meditation with yoga and meditation for a Christian? Well, Christians meditate on what's written in the Bible. They consider its meaning and its application to their lives. They contemplate God's love and His mercy in light of the plan of redemption. Yoga meditation involves focusing on your breathing, entering a sort of trance-like state, and emptying your mind. In my opinion, I think there's definitely a place for breathing exercises and for using them with stress management, even in forgiveness management. But I've found tremendous benefit in the Christian meditation in focusing my mind on something that's very uplifting rather than emptying it. I have a Facebook question. My wife went to a quantum analyzer. How effective is it? Well, from my research, there's no scientific data regarding these machines, and the theory upon which they work, or that they're supposed to work upon, is not really scientific. And then they give you a huge amount of information about yourself. That also makes me skeptical as to their credibility. So probably I wouldn't invest any money in a quantum analyzer. Another caller asked, should you limit your dairy if you have arthritis? And if so, how would that work? Well, avoiding high-fat dairy actually is helpful because high-fat dairy promotes inflammation, and arthritis is inflammation. Some people don't notice a difference when they use low-fat dairy. Others find relief from stopping dairy all the way. So try it out and see what works, but definitely cut out the high-fat dairy. Denise called, will calcium or vitamins help osteoarthritis? Not particularly. An anti-inflammatory, whole food, plant-based diet will definitely help. I've seen that help many times. And an ideal weight is a great way to start. There's glucosamine that can be sourced for vegetarians if you are vegetarian, and curcumin, boswellia, MSM, bromelain, and SAM-E are all helpful supplements, but I'm not sure about the calcium and vitamins. Thanks for those questions. You can call anytime and leave your question. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And if you're texting or calling from overseas, it's 301-960-5144. You can also post Facebook or tweet questions. Now we're off to the greengrocers. Onions are the third most consumed vegetable in the United States. They are so versatile, great for breakfast, casseroles, barbecues, and even holiday dinners. They give flavor, color, and texture to a wide variety of dishes and cuisines. 87% of the United States onion crop are yellow. They're a great, reliable standby for cooking almost anything. 8% of the crops are red onions, and with their wonderful flavour and colour, it's a good choice for roasting or for fresh. White onions make up just 5% of the US onion crop, and they're used in salads, white sauces, and they're the traditional onion for classical Mexican cuisine. And because they're one of the top 10 antioxidant veggies, be sure to have some most days. Bon appetit! Dr. Bigger holds 2 master's degrees and a PhD, along with many years' experience as a senior pastor. Despite all that, he found himself spiritually bankrupt and painfully aware of his own spiritual condition when his daughter's murder called for forgiveness. If we set up a moral scale with a perfect God at one end and then we as sinners all clustered together at the other, I asked him if that was indeed his revelation.
So for me to accept myself as one who could not solve my own problems was the beginning point of recovery for me. And that started with accepting the reality that Paul describes well in the book of Romans, chapter 3. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And I felt horrible to admit that about myself. I was a lifelong Christian believer. I was a professional Christian, if you will, a clergyman.
Right.
A teacher of principles and practices by which one ought to be able to accomplish those things, and it had been impossible for me. And that was a very harsh and stark facing of the reality about who I am as a person.
Now, that's very hard to lay that on top of your grief and loss.
Yes.
And the anger with which you're trying to deal and keep under control towards Anthony.
Yes. May I clarify one thing about that? Sometimes those who have been victimized by others feel as if they're the ones who brought this on themselves.
Right.
And that's not the kind of guilt and imperfection that I'm talking about. I'm talking about our basic nature as human beings. The responsibility that perpetrators need to face in what they do to other people is their responsibility, not the responsibility of the victim or the survivor.
Which they have often overlaid already.
Yes, that's exactly right. So many of them tend to feel guilt-prone. Mm-hmm. This is a whole different thing. This didn't have anything to do about Shannon's death. I wasn't responsible for what happened to her. I'm facing the responsibility for who I am as an angry, resentful, venge-filled human being.
Mm. So how did you deal with it?
I didn't deal with it. That's the beauty of what happened to me. That once I abandoned myself to the truth, God changed everything. Two chapters after that pronouncement by Paul that we are all incapable of living up to God's expectations for us, that we are all sinners. Two chapters later, he says that no one would be willing to sacrifice her or himself for a really good person. But God shows his love for us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. If Jesus could love me when I hated myself, and if that could dawn on me, then that changes everything.
Mm. And so for you, it was like you had always known that God loved you, but suddenly it moved that 18 inches to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
How did that allow you to then love Anthony and forgive him?
I like the way you expressed the question, because my ability to let go of my anger toward Anthony then became a passive acceptance of what God had done for me instead of an active process that I made to happen on my own. Instead of me taking care of myself, I accepted the fact that God had already done this for me. And God's gift allows me to let go of my anger toward perpetrators. So forgiveness, in my mind, my ability to become a forgiving person, is the result of God's gift to me. It's not the result of what I accomplish for myself.
And that gift that you receive, you then give to Anthony?
It comes as a natural response, that what we receive from other people, what we receive from God, we share with other people because we're witnesses of what happened to us. So telling our own story frees us from needing to carry out the rage and resentment and revenge that's an instinctive part of the evil that is in all of us.
Now that brings me to thinking that's good, we give it to others, but so often people find it hard to forgive themselves, shall we say. Say the example of an alcoholic. This is a very common problem. An alcoholic sobers up,
they realize the devastation they've left in their trail all these years, and they find it very hard to accept themselves, to forgive themselves for those things and the regrets that they live with. So how can we turn that to that kind of forgiveness, forgiveness of self?
Yep. And part of that starts with the process of accepting the truth about who we are. The 12-step programs begin with that initial focus.
Right, because the admission first step starts the process. Is admission.
Mm-hmm. It also becomes a crucial reality for us to admit the fact that we cannot, in and of ourselves, change who we are. So to accept the reality of where we are gives us a solid beginning point. I tell people that we can't forgive ourselves. There's an internal conundrum about that assumption. If we feel guilty because we have not lived up to our own wishes or expectations for ourselves, then how can we, because we're not doing what we think we should be doing, how can we forgive ourselves for not doing what we know we ought to be doing? It just doesn't make sense. The only way we could accomplish that would be to ignore what we have done, and that's, I'm afraid, a very common human approach.
Right.
That we either ignore it or pretend that it wasn't important, in some way depreciate the importance of what we have perpetrated. Or we gloss over what we have done in such a way that it's an insignificant issue and we focus our worth on other parts of life.
So what happened to Anthony? We'll be back after a short break. And we're back. Let's find out what happened to Anthony.
I'm very anxious for the resurrection, and Jesus is coming soon. But it also brings back the memory of when Anthony was sentenced to his life in prison. It was on Good Friday. And all of that tied up with Jesus' death.
I remember you're saying to the media the day of his sentencing, that it was a doubly sad day because two families lost children. We had lost Shannon by her murder, and Anthony's family and friends lost him because of his life without the possibility of parole sentencing. So there's lots of sadness on Good Fridays, but hope for the resurrection on Sunday.
Sunday's coming.
We heard later from the detectives that they spent hours and hours after having found Shannon looking for who did this. They were particularly motivated because they recognized this wasn't a drug deal that had gone bad or a prostitute who was being attacked.
Amazingly, actually, when they were ready to give up after hours of driving, pulled up to an intersection and there was the white van. They let it go ahead of them at the stoplight, and that was the license they were looking for. So they quickly got Washington, D.C. police to pull it over and apprehended. Well, the driver was not Anthony at that time.
They had a search warrant and went into Anthony's where he was staying and found him and a number of things from her apartment. And the short version of the longer court story is that to avoid the death penalty, he accepted a life sentence without the possibility of parole,
plus another life sentence plus 20 years for first-degree murder, for attempted sexual offense, and for armed robbery. And when he appealed his sentences, we had no indication from him from any of any repentance or sorrow or apologies. In this part of the United States, they strictly forbid any kind of contact whatsoever between perpetrators and victims. And we had to learn that forgiveness can come in spite of or apart from the response of the perpetrator. Forgiveness is a gift from God, not a human accomplishment.
And it's a gift that's free, but you need to prepare your heart for it. Now you've heard the whole story. It was a huge challenge for the Biggers to forgive. But in doing so, they've made the biggest difference to their lives. I asked Dr. Bigger how forgiveness contributes to spiritual health and what that entails.
The human tendency is for us to evaluate our worth and presume that happiness in life comes when we're successful. And other people's affirmation of us or perception of us is what gives us that sense of accomplishment. There's a fallacy in that we all know that we don't always accomplish what we think we could or should accomplish. So there's some sense of inadequacy built in all of us. The beauty in the Christian approach to life is that God looks at us, as we've said, through Paul's words, we're all sinners, we're incapable of doing what God's intention was for us. In spite of that, God loves us so much that He gave Himself for us, that He reconciles us to Himself, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 5, that John, in that probably the most common Christian text, says that God so loved the world that He gave Himself so that He could redeem us. That evaluation of God, of sacrificing Himself for me as the spiritually bankrupt, incapable person, places supreme value on me. To the degree that I am willing to accept my unlimited value in God's eyes, I feel accepted and loved and affirmed by my Creator.
So it's like the value of an object is what you pay for it.
Exactly.
And then you see that object through the value of the price. And if we do that for ourselves from God's perspective rather than from our, you know, on the evil spectrum, rather from that perception, we see it from His perception.
Sure.
And we are in the Beloved, so to speak.
In the auction of human beings, God has trumped every other price. No one can offer more than this.
Mm. And that's the beauty of Christianity, that God paid the ultimate price for us. Mm-hmm. And He would have done it for just one of us.
So our challenge then, in order to feel confident and self-assured, adequate for what God's wishes are, is simply to believe what He says is true about us, that we are worth everything to Him. So the question then about spiritual health is, do I trust what God tells me, or do I trust these fickle emotions that I feel or the thoughts that I have about myself?
So for our viewers, how do you get to that point of trust? You teach spirituality, so teach us how to build spiritual health.
It takes practice, and it requires an intentional choice, a mental decision that is reinforced by practice and experiences. And there are some exercises we can do that help build that frame of mind, that create the experience of what we tell ourselves is the truth. It's the same kind of struggle Adam and Eve faced in the Garden of Eden. Do they believe what God tells them about life, or are they going to try to fix themselves and take care of it on their own?
Now, you're talking about some exercises or disciplines. What would they be?
To take some of God's promises, for example.
Out of the Bible.
And reflect on them, meditate on them. Meditation is the word the scripture uses about those. And let us come to the place where we choose to believe and accept those into our lives as a reality. And then every time there's a temptation to disbelieve the degree to which God has already accepted us, in the middle of a blunder or a failure or of saying or doing something that's hurtful to someone else, to choose to believe that in spite of what I have said and done, God still loves me. It becomes a discipline of trust rather than a discipline of self-improvement.
Now, I'm thinking just briefly as we finish, there must have been some health effects when you were in your angry stage. Mm. What benefits did you experience in giving forgiveness to Anthony?
Two things about that. For me, it was a dramatic moment that morning in church. And I realized when I had been stunned at my own evil, when I realized that God loved me at that moment. It wasn't just when I got angry at my sister or upset at my parents or whatever. It was at this fundamental internal part of me that God, it was at that moment God loved me. When I walked out of church that morning, I realized that the knots were gone from my stomach, that my jaw and hands were relaxed for the first time in weeks. And research studies back up the reality of how forgiveness can complement good health, and unforgiveness complicates the health of people who choose to hang on to their grievances.
If you're harboring unforgiveness, it's time to let go. Don't complicate your health by hanging on to a grievance. Recall the grievance. Become aware of your body's responses, the pent-up energy that's eating you from the inside. Assess your emotional response and begin to rationally deal with what truly happened. Look at it from different perspectives. Then think about all the hurts that you've inflicted on others and realize your own sinful condition. But don't stop there. Turn and look at yourself through the eyes of God, a God who forgives you, loves you, and values you so much that He died for you. He offers to cover your past and give you a brand new start. So accept Him today. Thanks for joining me on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.